My name is Wangkara. I am a Kikuyu Kenyan African woman and a global social justice activist. And that gives me privilege and very challenging platform globally, continentally, and locally to engage with all initiatives that are working out for social transformation to guarantee social justice grounded on economic justice, because without economic reparation, then we cannot get social justice. So the issue of the struggles of political and civil rights are over, and the swindle through the United Nations after the Second World War is very clear, as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights has just demonstrated that it has been a fallacy, and it has just continued to expedient what the world order designed after the Second World War. So, with this century, we have to work very hard for what I would call second and third generation rights, economic, social, and cultural rights. And currently, I am saying, I have that benefit to be an agent of this change through the campaign of debt cancellation, which I coordinate here locally, linked up with Jubilee South, that is the campaigns of Latin America, Africa, and Asia. And I'm also very involved with the spirit of the World Social Forum, another world is possible. So we are also saying another Africa is possible. I sit in the coordinating committee of the African Social Forum and the Kenya Social Forum, because another Kenya is possible. And we are hopeful through the Kenya Social Forum, another village in Kenya is possible, and another spirit of humanity is possible. So that is what I'm engaged with, in capturing the moment, the historical moment of the paradigm shift, where we are having very, very clear forces engaging, forces that prescribe to sustenance of making more profit and more profit at the expense of life, and forces that say life must be sustained by any means necessary, because the forces of profit, which seems to be very powerful, cannot overcome the forces of life, because life makes profit, but profit does not make life. So I don't know whether I have said and summarized what I am. I am a woman, a mother, and a freedom fighter.
We're here today with Wangkara on June 29th, 2004, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the controversy that has developed surrounding the new Kenyan constitution one day or so from when it is supposed to have been adopted. And Wahu, I'm wondering if you could maybe start by telling us what all the fuss is about and why people were agitating for a new constitution in place of the old one.
The issue of the new constitution has been a big struggle, because when we go back to our history, we are a conquered nation by the British from the scramble for Africa in the 19th century. And therefore, without interruption, we were integrated to the political economic setup of the British governance. And that distorted what was emerging as the Kenyan identity. And subsequently, by the time we were through with resistance in struggle for independence, and in particular with the landmark of the Mau Mau liberation, the Kenyans were still insisting and making a demand on their own constitution. And with the advent of independence, what we see is that there was just a constitution for handing power over from the British colonial majesty to our co-opted, I would say, leadership. that steered nationalism, but had become very socialized to the values and to the governance on the British model. So as much as the Kenyan people were very hopeful that they now were in charge of their destiny, it didn't take long to realize that they hadn't, because the constitution that ushered in independence was immediately changed by the ruling elite of the time under Jomo Kenyatta's governance. And from the prime minister parliamentary democracy model that the independence had taken under the Lancaster constitution, Kenyatta changed it in 1964 to a presidential parliamentary model, and since then continued to mutilate the constitution to serve the expediency of the political elite. And therefore, those that were already very conscious politically and had realized that in spite of a hard-won struggle for our liberation, so to speak, political independence and the flag symbol, we had lost everything. And those that stood up to make demands of the real sort of liberation that people had fought of were persecuted, either by death, detention, or totally being sidelined and alienated from the political processes. So that struggle continued unabated until in the early 90s, when now also the international scenario that changed after the collapse of the Soviet Union, we do find the Western powers shifting fast to disown the dictators that they had always collaborated with and had maintained and had supported all through during the Cold War. And our President Moi was one of those, and immediately he was also at a loss, because the same powers that supported him and worked with him started calling him dictator and joined the forces that had been resisting his reign in putting up resistance that he was selling out to the Kenyan people. So in the 90s, that's when I would say the constitution struggle took center stage, and it started off by the struggle for multipartism, and after the Section 2A that had made our country a one-party state was repealed, those that realized that the landscape is not just the Section 2A as far as the political situation was concerned, much more fundamental changes required to be in the constitution to enable the participation of the citizens, but not just the change of hands of the political elite. So that struggle goes on, and it is known well clearly here that the first meeting that made the demand of the multi-party democracy, insisting that we must go multi-party, was on a very remarkable date on 7th July. So we have Saba Saba, Nane Nane, Tisa Tisa, Kumi Kumi, which means in the month of July, month of August, month of September, month of... Thus, the struggles went on and people were out in streets demanding for a new constitution.
Could you explain a bit of the significance of those struggles? And perhaps for people who are not as familiar with Kenyan history, what do you mean by Saba Saba?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to explain, that in the 90s, when the struggle heightened to a point of now demanding multi-party democracy, the dictatorship of the time of a President Moi was still adamant that the constitution cannot change to allow multi-party democracy. We still were going to be one party, but people were demanding. And in 1990, the first meeting that had mobilized the people to demand for multi-party system, demanding the repeal of Section 2A, that had mutilated the constitution to allow one party and refused the space for more than one party, which was done in 1982, was now the remarkable day where people went to a public ground that is known for resistance throughout history called Kamukunji. So those that had disagreed with the government of the time and with that dictatorship and wanted multi-party joined the rest of the Kenyans as they have been struggling, and senior ruling elite of the time, Kenneth Matiba and Rubia, declared that they would go to Kamukunji on 7th July 1990 with a license or without. So they were arrested and detained. But people still, under very difficult circumstances, went to Kamukunji to demand multipartism, and they were confronted by police, but they still went. And since then, every month, people went on to demand. So that's why Saba Saba is 7th July, Nane Nane is the month of August, Nane is 8. Tisa Tisa is the month of September, which is 9. Kumi Kumi is the month of October, which is, and it went on from since 1990. Every month, when it comes to July, people will still reawaken to go and demand the new constitution and once again repeat Saba Saba, Nane Nane, Tisa Tisa, Kumi Kumi. And it intensified to such a level that the constitutional concern became a great issue. From repeal section 2A for multi-party democracy to constitutional reforms, review to constitutional review to constitutional reform to constitutional making. So between 1990 and to date, that's what was happening, and many things have happened, mobilizing and organizing people around there. So at the height of it, in the elections of 1997, the civil society and religious organization and all other stakeholders came under a process we call Ufungamano that was led by religious leaders. And it is that initiative that became very, very strong for the government not to ignore. And the government once again backtracked their position of being defiant to listen to the voice of the people, and they began to negotiate with other parties. It is called the IPPG, Interparty Parliamentary Negotiations with Ufungamano. And that's how the Review Act to write the constitution now was agreed upon, through structures like parliamentary committee, constitutional committee, which had to establish the constitutional CKRC, Constitution of Kenya Review Commission, which was supposed to go and collect information from the public or from the people, who were nicknamed Wanjiko. You will hear the name Wanjiko, which is, talks about the ordinary people giving their views on what sort of constitution they will make. After collecting the Wanjiko's views, the CKRC was supposed to, therefore, to collect that information and summarize it in a constitutional framework as a draft to be discussed at the conference. And that conference opened last year. And throughout the year, the discussion of that conference went on. And nonetheless, the current government had gone into campaign with one promise: to give the constitution in 100 days. And that's why it was supported overwhelmingly by all Kenyans. And that's why the coalition of the parties, it became possible because of that one factor that was unifying our forces. So with the opening of the National Conference, the constitutional final stage had come, and the government, through President Kibaki, who was delegate number one, opened the conference with all the promises that the government was not going to interfere, because people still feared with the process, and he supported the process, and we were all determined to have the constitution within schedule of the Review Act. But the experience is there were many interruptions, and the government continued to demonstrate they did not want the new constitution, and they were going to scatter the process. But the delegates were determined, and especially the delegates from Wanjiku herself, those delegates from the district, stayed very strong in steering the process until the process was over. And by the time of the finalizing, in the month of March, the government, who had absconded much of the process, started coming back and talked of contentious issues. And they were rejecting the article of executive, which talks about the separation of powers, where president remains the head of state and prime minister becomes the head of government. And that is what much of the discussion from the people had brought on board, including the current government when they were in opposition. Their submission actually stated exactly what the draft states today. The other contentious issue to the argument is also the article on decentralization of power, the devolution article, which comes out very strongly on how we begin to reorganize our society in terms of how we want to begin to see each and every person is involved and is part and parcel of decision making, in particular on how we create wealth and how we distribute that wealth. So the starting point, which goes to the principle of subsidiarity, was to begin at the location, then the district, the region, and then the nation, so that we begin to create wealth for distribution, but not collection of wealth for allocation, which dictates a totally different paradigm shift. And that contradicts the status quo, and therefore this is a contentious issue. Although we are looking forward for a new constitution to put us in a new dispensation. So where we are now, the whole process of the constitution making was done within the legal basis that there was, the Constitutional Review Act, and the draft was adapted within the demands of the Act with the 66% actually, and no article was rejected, because if it was, it had to garner a one-third majority for protest, which did not happen. So as we finalized the process, there was nothing contentious. What was contentious was the interest of the ruling elites, like I have said, because of the articles that were going to interfere with the setup of the privileges of how they enjoy power and how they access the resources and the wealth of the public without question, and how they can misuse or squander or allocate whatever they do without the involvement of the citizen, leave alone parliament. Because with the presidential powers as they have been, the president works with his nearest loyalist or cohorts, if I may say so, and they can go and use their powers and use whatever resources the nation has to their own disposal without any question. So these are the matters that the Constitution, like I'm saying, is addressing, in particular through those two articles. which try to interpret the statement from the Bill of Rights, because the Bill of Rights puts that all clearly. And the Bill of Rights carries the aspiration of what Kenyans are able to state in the preamble. So if any of those has to be tampered with, it means the whole constitution therefore is mutilated. And that's why today there is that big conflict or question between the forces that wants to remain the status quo, and that is the ruling elite, who confuse the few now on the tribal question again, because President Kibaki is a Kikuyu and he wants to say the Kikuyus are being threatened by the other nationalities. And that has been the song of divide and rule right from when the colonialists came here. That's how they have been maintaining the balance of power, by dividing tribe against one another. So what we have today is a clear manifestation of the two forces. And that's why we are having a rally on 3rd for popular support at Uhuru Park, and a counter rally which has just been announced by the ruling elite to be held at the symbolic grounds of our resistance at Kamukunji. So the question is now, they are resisting against the people themselves. The government is walking away from the people, because the people will be at Uhuru Park. And that is exactly what they did at the National Conference, at the critical moment when we were finalizing the work and we were voting article for article, when they could not be able to mobilize enough support to vote against the article of devolution and the article of the executive. They walked out, which means the government walked out of the republic at the National Conference. Now they have walked against the nation, because they are holding their own rally at Kamukunji when every other person is going to Uhuru Park. So the issue of whether we are going to have a new constitution or not now is the question. And the government has not rejected the position of having a new constitution. What it's trying is to work out a constitution, constitutional changes that are favorable to them. But as a nation, we want a new constitution, which we have already worked out and agreed upon. And all what is remaining is for parliament to enact it to a law for implementation. And that's what we are struggling for our constitution to be enacted and implemented. If the government is not finding it possible to do so, then as Kenyans, we have a duty and responsibility to our destiny. So on 3rd July 2004 at Uhuru Park, we are just making that declaration that we have the constitution which we worked upon, which we fought for, and we adapted, enacted for ourselves and future generations on 15th March at Bomas.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you.
I was wondering if I could ask you, I have two sort of kind of questions just that I wanted to ask in terms of more detail about what you said. If we could just do that. How would people's ordinary Kenyans' lives change if the constitution was ratified as has been proposed in the preparatory committee? Say that were to happen in the next week or so, or whenever it was. Once that constitution is in place, how would people's lives change? What would they notice that would be different in terms of their day-to-day existence? Not so much what's written on a piece of paper somewhere, but what do women gain out of it? What do students or youth or ordinary people on the street, what do people gain from it?
The gains are immediate, short-term, and long-term. The immediate gain is the reclamation of the national identity, the ownership of what really nature has bestowed to each and every citizen and total sum our nation. That solid manifestation that we are a nation with an identity, focus, and orientation. A nation bestowed with wealth that we can be able to transform to the riches that needs to cater for our daily dignified life. That in itself is very, very important because it shall shape our thinking and it shall inspire our spirit towards a hopeful dispensation and overcome the hopelessness and the apathy that currently is the experience of the nation, manifesting itself in very, very unbecoming hopelessness, like the crime wave, the domestic violence, the accidents on the road. All these are manifestations of a society that has broken down. So the Constitution will give back the mandate, the legitimacy, the responsibility, the accountability of the reconstruction of our society. And the Constitution puts in a framework of being able to do so. So it will be the challenge of the Kenyans to breathe life into it, so that now it begins to translate in manifestation of how their lives changes in quality. Like I am talking about the evolution. So if people are going to be involved in decision making at their local level, and therefore they will be able to think together and through of their immediate concern, like for example, do they want developed based on human and social investment or in just accumulation of wealth for the expedience of the few? For example, do they want to guarantee in their own location that there is food security or not? And because the principle of subsidiarity through devolution is guaranteeing decision making to every citizen, the value of every citizen becomes important. And people are important because they make decisions. Even the ruling elites, they are not any different from us. It's only that they have the space and the opportunity to make a decision. So when we begin to make a decision, that is the immediate gain. And making decisions goes with responsibility and accountability. And making decisions on what? On how we manage our own public affairs or our lives. What is managing our own life and public affairs? How we meet our basic needs for our lives. And what are those basic needs? Our economic engagement and activities. So how do we manage them politically? So it is the total sum of that, what I would call paradigm shift of orienting people to focusing more into working out what answers and solution do they have to the very, very fundamental questions of today. People sleeping hungry, poverty rising at such high level, HIV and AIDS, all these social pandemics that the Kenyan people are experiencing. And that will be an ongoing process to eternity, if I may put it so. But for me, the immediate thing, it is the confidence the Constitution puts in every citizen. It is the hope that it breathes to the nation. And it is the new way and the alternatives of being able to engage with the challenges of life, in particular how we create wealth and how we distribute wealth. And that is very well taken care of by the articulation of the preamble and safeguarded in the Bill of Rights and interpreted in practice through devolution and mandated that it has to happen through the separation of powers, where the president is the head of state and the prime minister the head of government, strengthening parliament so that they take accountability to see that that happens. And it is well refined and frameworks put in place through representation, legislation. All these articles are safeguarding what that new hope is all about. The article on finance speaks very clearly on how we interact internationally, especially in the question of how we borrow money. Not anymore shall we have the government borrowing money without sanction from the people through parliament. And not anymore will the government borrow more than we can be able to pay. So these are the very, very fundamental issues that that the Constitution brings in. Our culture, what should be our culture? Articulating and appreciating of our diversity, which is no longer a weakness but a strength. So what cultural values do we begin to want to encourage and to strengthen from our past and contextualize to our today so that in the future prosperity can be there?
In recent years, there's been a movement in Venezuela with the government of Hugo Chavez around building a new constitution and of making the people in that country familiar with a constitution that safeguards their rights and seems to do many of the things that you were talking about this new Kenyan constitution doing. To your knowledge, are there any connections, or was that a source of inspiration, or did that at all inform this constitutional struggle, or are those just two separate...
Between what and what?
Well, in Venezuela, there was a movement building a new constitution, and I'm just, out of curiosity, wondering if that's something that you knew about, or that people that were working in this movement knew about or were inspired by.
Yeah, fortunately, I'm associated with the World Social Forum and the spirit of the World Social Forum, which now the Venezuela spirit from Latin America comes in, because the World Social Forum is very much inspired by the Central American, Latin America history, which is not very different from us. And after the Cold War, the world is undergoing a new redefinition. That's why we are having the U.S. isolated there and the European Union trying to be packaged to be the face, to be selling the interests of the Western civilization. So equally, those that are in conflict in resurrecting themselves and reclaiming themselves are in that process. And the spirit of Venezuela and Kenya links very well, because we have been the downtrodden, we've been the exploited part of the world. We've been the denied space part of the world. We are the so-called developing countries versus developed countries. So as developed countries are finding new strategies and new conspiracies on how to continue plundering the wealth of the world in the name of civilization, so we are also redefining ourselves on how we counter them by being in charge of our destiny. That's the only way out. And that's why redefinition and new constitutions are very, very important. Because constitution is not the documents. It is a spirit that document states and stipulates. And it is the frameworks that documents guarantees that spirit and aspiration will be practical as people engage with life. So I think that is exactly, and now that you bring that comparison, Venezuela, when they were trying to throw out their president and went on strike with their ports there, saying there is it Argentina?
No,
Venezuela.
Venezuela.
Yeah, because they are refusing the president who is being able to engage with powers that will the neoliberal agenda.
This was a strike backed by the Americans? And the
yes, exactly, okay. To remove the president, yeah. That president. So, because he's very clear on what he's doing, he comes out with his own pot and joins the demonstrators, because he identifies with them and he knows the predicament, and he's him being besieged as a leader, it is because he cannot expedient the interests of the North America and Western civilization of containing the neoliberal agenda through the Washington Consensus. So that is again happening here in Kenya, but this time around Kenyan government has come out clearly that it doesn't link with the spirit of the Kenyan. And that's why, as the spirit of the new constitution goes to Uhuru Park, the spirit which is anti the Kenyan spirit, manifested by the greediness and selfishness of the ruling elite, is going to abuse and to insult the Kenyan history by wanting to identify themselves with the resistance ground of Kamkunji. So, you know, history does not repeat itself, but I think it has some parallelism. And I think the question of experience in life is very, very close across the globe. And I think with this globalization manners, as much as global capital wants to confuse us, that the village is too small and therefore we should just watch them as they plunder the world, I think the spirit of humanity is also saying, indeed, the globe is very small and it's a small village because we are linking up and we are realizing who we are engaging with. So I think the similarity and the comparison of people all over the world who has been struggling is the same, only perhaps a degree and the manner differs, just like the experience of the exploiting world is the same, linked up with their lackeys outside in the capitals of so-called developing world.